This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the October 9th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. I come here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to take a look back at what happened at last weekend, UFC 243, Bellator 229. Talk about the star power of Israel Adesanya, now the unified middleweight champion. Also, we'll talk about the main event in Bellator. They had a great main event between Lorenz Larkin and Andrei Kreshkov. Then we are going to preview all of this weekend's MMA, folks. And let me just tell you, there is a crap ton of MMA this weekend. We have got PFL on Thursday. We got Bellator in Milan. We've got the UFC in my hometown of Tampa. We got a Ryzen show. We got a ONE Championship show. So there is plenty of MMA to take in. We'll talk about some of the fights that are going to be taking place this weekend. Then we'll get into Tito Ortiz, Alberto Del Rio. It's now official. It's going to be in Daniel's backyard, so we'll talk to Daniel about that. Also, we'll talk about the Bellator Ryzen press conference that took place on Wednesday in Japan, as Fedor Rampage is going to headline that card, so we'll talk about that. And then at the end of the show is going to be some UFC Tampa interviews. This is a true honest story. After I get done recording this show, later on this afternoon, on Wednesday afternoon, heading over to the Fire Hotel. Going to be speaking with Eric Anders, Tim Elliott, and Thomas Gifford. All those guys are confirmed. Who knows? Maybe there'll be more guys on the show, but those are definitely the guys, as of recording this part of the podcast, that are going to be on the show. But Daniel, man, how you doing, man?
Jason, I'm doing quite well. I'm ready to dig into all this mixed martial arts action. I'm excited for the interviews later on in the show. You got some good ones lined up, buddy. But yeah, wow, we had a nice little weekend of mixed martial arts, a nice little UFC pay-per-view, and a sprinkle of Bellator. But if you are a hardcore mixed martial arts fan, I mean, this is like MMA oversaturation. You got to pick the fights you want to see a la carte. And I think we're going to help you guys out with that. We're going to give you guys some of our top fights of the weekend that you can kind of pick out and seek out and watch, because literally there is not enough time in the day to watch all of these cards.
Yeah, you got to pick and choose which ones you're going to watch there. But yeah, there is a ton of MMA going on. True story, Daniel, we'll talk about this a little later. Did not realize till about a couple days ago we had a PFL event on Thursday.
Dude, it snuck up on you. It snuck up on me.
And you're hearing two people who like are very in tune to the mixed martial arts community, that's gotta be a concern.
And to quote like Jim Mora, it's playoffs. We should know. It's playoffs. You know, it's the playoffs. We should totally know, Jason, that it's coming up, man. I mean, we're going to get the quarterfinals of the welterweight tournament and the semifinals in one single night. We're going to get Kayla Harrison, literally their number one star, and we totally – it snuck up on us. You're right. It's definitely the event I'm most looking forward to this weekend out of all of the fight cards we're getting. But, you know, that along with, you know, the 1FC card kind of stuck up on us. I mean, the 1FC card, I think, stinks up on us every time, because it's just, yeah. honest to goodness, I think it's the fact that it's I think the early start times. And for some reason, Ryzen, even though it starts early, is, I don't know. I don't know why 1FC sneaks up on us, even though they have, honestly, 1FC has two fights in my top five, so... You know, it's a good little card. So, yeah. Anyways, a lot of things stuck up on us, but we got it all in front of us, so we'll dig into it.
And that'll become here in a little bit. But, of course, we're going to start off the show by talking about what we saw last weekend. And, you know, so I didn't watch UFC 243 live as I was in New Orleans. But on Sunday morning, I see the video of Israel Adesanya's walkout, and it made me think about our show from last week, Daniel, where it was very early on the show, and you mentioned about, you know, television production, about how, you know, there is a difference between what we see from the Bellator and the UFC, and I noted that's because Bellator is more about the fighter brand as opposed to the promotional brand, and by golly, the UFC, they actually put a spotlight on a fighter.
Yeah, man, they had some dancing. I love me some dancing. I mean, what I loved about it you know, obviously what's amazing is he goes into enemy territory and does this too. And it's just unbelievable. He came across very much like a star, man. And my thought was watching that, and it kind of coincides with the experience I had this weekend. I was not able to watch this fight card live because I went to the Austin City Limits Concert Festival. That's what I did on Saturday. And when I watched some of these big time, and I don't go to concerts much. I don't get out much, Jason. Spend most of my time inside or at a Buffalo Wings. But what I gathered watching some of these bigger superstars perform is, like, yes, they're musically talented, obviously, but the number one thing they have is that superstar presence. And it extends from MMA to pro wrestling to entertainment. And it's just like, I don't even know how to explain it, that charisma, but it's absolutely a big factor to getting people to spend money to watch you. And you watch some of the top acts at the concert, they just have a superstar charisma without saying a single beat. And Israel Adesanya definitely possesses that. When you watch the walkout, when you watch him fight, he definitely comes across as a guy that is worthy of your attention. So I totally dug the entrance. I thought it was awesome. That was the beginning of Israel Adesanya amazing me on Saturday night. I can't believe the dude did all that before a fight. Mm-hmm. But it definitely paid off. So I definitely dig it. And I think that the UFC should continue to do more of stuff like that. I think we're going to see some really good production elements at the Ryzen card this weekend. They tend to deliver with the bigger fights. So I dig it, Jason. I absolutely do.
Yeah, I thought it was a great performance by Israel as well. And, I mean, look, you can see this guy has that it factor. You look at the rise of Israel Adesanya. I mean, the guy's been in the UFC, you know, almost 2 years, you know, when he made his UFC debut. And, you know, I do think in a way there is some correlations into what we saw, the rise of Conor McGregor when he came into the UFC and how quickly he rose up and getting in title fights. And I think there is kind of that same type of note with Israel Adesanya. I mean, obviously it's a little different because, you know, Conor's, you know, the trash talk that he brought and he brought this enthusiasm. But, you know, when I look at that UFC middleweight division, you know, I don't know if there's really a guy that I look at and say, I think that's the guy that can take the belt from Israel Adesanya at this point. I mean, obviously he can have a bad night. But I think, you know, you look skill for skill and what he can do with the range and what he's done. I think, you know, really it's going to be is, you know, does he eventually fight somebody with, say, you know, a big wrestling style that also has a jiu-jitsu game? But, man, this guy, you know, this guy's here. We're in the Israel Adesanya area, you know, and he has all the makings to be a star. I think the question is whether the UFC can kind of elevate his star power.
It's going to be hard, man. It really is, because he comes across like a star to us. But the science to get these guys to the next level is the biggest problem the UFC faces, because it's just impossible to figure out. You know, there isn't a college course on figuring out how to become a megastar, how to become the next Conor McGregor. And for Adesanya, man, he's got so many things you want in that. He's got a really nice attitude in terms of being entertaining. He's got a great presence. And when the fight starts, he's unbelievable. All I could think of when watching his fight against Robert Whittaker was that this dude, Israel Adesanya, is a phenom inside the cage. It was a hell of a performance against the middleweight champion of the world. A guy in Robert Whittaker who we've seen go through some hellacious wars with Yoel Romero in back-to-back fights. I mean, you know, taking those fights might with hindsight be one of the craziest things Robert Whittaker ever did. Because fighting Yoel Romero two times is like fighting a normal guy 10 times. Like, that probably took a lot out of him. And so mad respect to him. But Whittaker looked, I guess, a step slow against Adesanya. It just felt like Israel Adesanya inside the cage was seeing things a lot faster than Whittaker. His movement was just evasive, and he really set his body up in a way to deliver damage to Whittaker on counters. And early on, Robert Whittaker was having some success, but it really felt like Israel Adesanya kind of got a sense of what Whitaker was doing and where he was doing it from. And then towards the end of that first round, he starts taking control. And in round two, he ultimately gets the finish. He did have that flash knockdown to end round one. So my thought just watching it was, it felt like Adesanya went in the cage with a guy who was a champion in the weight class, and he was just fighting at a faster speed than he was. He was processing the game faster than him. And that, to me, is all the recipe for a phenom in a weight class. Israel Adesanya looks unbelievable. And I tell you what, when you look at the UFC middleweight division, it's an exciting time to be a UFC fan, because if you've been paying attention, I mean, how can you not get excited about Israel Adesanya taking on Paulo Costa and down the line, maybe Yoel Romero? But that Costa-Adesanya fight is an absolute banger.
Yeah, I mean, you got to throw Jared Cannonier as another name to potentially be in there. But, yeah, you got to do that Paulo Costa fight. Of course, we saw Paulo there. You know, when we look at the rest of UFC 243, Daniel, you know, I think there was a couple of surprises. I think you look at Sergey Spivak getting that technical submission over Taha Tuivasa, Callum Potter getting a win over Malky Patolo. I'll say this. Malky Patolo was the guy I had the most confidence in winning at UFC 243, and he gets it done. I mean, but of course, you know, some of those fighters you expected to win did go out there and get the win. You know, Megan Anderson, Jake Matthews, Khalid Taha. You know, Jorgen Castro, beautiful knockout he had against Justin Taffa. Here is my WTF moment of this fight card.
Okay.
Did you see that Diego Lima's team wants to go, you know, get this split decision changed to a unanimous decision, that they're appealing it?
I mean, it should have been a unanimous decision, but
you won the fight already.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, this is wasting people's time. Like, are people going to look at you differently because you won by split decision?
Also, round three, you fought conservative as hell. Round three, you let Luke Jimmo win that fight, win that round.
I mean, just like, if you lost by split decision, okay, I get the appeal. But you goddamn won.
Yeah, you're right. Imagine they, like, upon further review, we saw there was an ice cube in the cage at minute 250. This is a no contest. Yeah, that's a head scratcher, a decision.
Look, let's be honest about it. It's a 0.000001 chance that gets overturned to a unanimous. I mean, like, it's just like, come on. I wonder, like, when Mark Ratner, regulatory affairs of the UFC, gets that phone call, does he just go, what the?
Yeah. I mean, look, he clearly won a unanimous decision. I mean, his leg kicks were lethal, but that's a head scratcher for sure. That's a what the heck? It's like you get a D+ and you complain you didn't get a C-. Like, chill out. All right, just be happy what you got. You got the win. You almost got screwed, but you got the win. So that's a head scratcher.
Anything else about the card stick out to you?
I mean, you really nailed it in terms of, like, what mattered. I mean, if you want to watch, like, what to watch if you're someone who hasn't seen the card yet. I mean, obviously the main event, definitely Jorgen De Castro versus Justin Taffa. Like, that's going to be probably the most enjoyable experience you'll have, because Jorgen De Castro literally sent Justin Taffa to, like, the grave. Like, he knocked him the hell out. He went straight down. You mentioned Sergey Spivak's win over Tai Tuivasa. I mean, that fight was all about recovering from the heavy shots of Tuivasa, using wrestling, and eventually tapping him out. Megan Anderson, easy win over Dos Santos. Jae-Yoon Kim looked awesome against Nadia Kassim at that catch weight at 128 pounds. Yoon Kim's striking is just really, really at a great level, and she overwhelmed Kassim, hit her with the body shot after body shot, and eventually dropped her, got the victory. And then this, the number one takeaway from the entire fight card outside the main event, had to have been the co-main event between Dan Hooker and Ali Aquinta. I mean, this was an awesome performance for Dan Hooker. He was taking on a guy, and Ali Aquinta, who very, very tough. I know Hooker was a slight favorite heading into this fight, but he widened the gap between these two. I mean, he was in control with the stand-up. It all matriculated from the leg kicks he landed round after round doing damage. And Dan Hooker was just the better striker of the two. Whenever Aquinta would look to utilize his wrestling, it was a great defensive approach from Dan Hooker. So in the lightweight division, Dan Hooker really asserted himself. He called out Dustin Poirier. I think Poirier is much more into getting the fight with Connor, as he said on Twitter. But Dan Hooker's put himself in a position where that Dustin Poirier fight makes a lot of sense, but he probably will fight someone else next.
Yeah. I think there's a, Poirier, Gaethje, they're both looking for that Conor fight, and we'll see if that happens. But of course, on Friday night, it was UFC, Bellator 229, excuse me, a great main event between Lorenz Larkin and Andrei Kereshkov. Kereshkov clearly wins the first round, and then Larkin looks tremendous in the second round. I think you can definitely make the case it should have been a 10-8 round. And then, I gave the fight to Larkin with a third round, two rounds to one. But a great fight. If you didn't watch that fight, go back and watch that fight. That was a tremendous fight. A little bit of a viral knockout of Tony Johnson knocking out Joe Schilling. Tony Johnson, the guy coming off Contender Series. By the way, speaking of the Contender Series alums, Julius Angelikis, who we saw on that on this past season, he has signed with Bellator. Also, Gochi Yamauchi, another submission win. Great, just tremendous submission win there. I mentioned on the podcast last week, names to look out for: Joey Davis and Johnny Edwin both get a win.
Yeah, man, I think Lorenz Larkin, Kereshkov, best fight of the weekend. Larkin getting a nice victory over a talented welterweight. Joe Schilling was on his way to win that fight, but that knockout, might send him out of the whole damn sport. This dude's in a rut, but Tony Johnson got the win, like you said. And then, yeah, man, Yamauchi, he got punched by Saeed Awad. He's like, damn, I don't like that. Took it to the ground and locked on an armbar and got the tap out, so it was a nice little Bellator card. I think the one we just saw is quite a bit better than the one we're about to get from Milan, Italy. But Kereshkov Larkin was, to me, the best fight from a pure, action standpoint. Mm-hmm. The star power of UFC 243 is makes a more compelling television. But Larkin Kereshkov was definitely the fun fight to watch this weekend.
You think about Lorenz Larkin, when he came into Bellator, he wanted the tough fights. And they give him the title fight, loses a decision to Douglas Lima. Then he gets knocked out by Paul Daly. But since then, he has won three in a row. So obviously he puts himself in a great position. Potentially maybe maybe he gets the winner of Rory and Douglas Lima or number one contender fight. And you look at, Gochi Yamauchi, I think, is the other guy you got to really look at. He's now won back-to-back fights, and now he has won five of his last six. His only loss in that time frame was against Michael Chandler. This guy's got wins against Daniel Feitschel, Adam Piccolotti. This guy is one of the elite 155-pound fighters. And obviously, that 155-pound division, especially at the top of that division with Patricio Pitbull being the champion, really don't know when that belt is going to get defended next. But, man, it just – and I want to say that was the first submission loss for Saeed Awad in 10 years.
Wow, unbelievable. I would have figured that would have been more just because what Iwad's bringing to the table with this power punching. Yeah. So you would think guys would bring it down. But yeah, Yamauchi, I think I read he's tied with Michael Chandler and Ali Malay and Neiman Gracie for the number six for the most submission wins in Bellator. And I would say Neiman Gracie's my pick, but it might just be Ali Malay McFarlane. But I think these fighters are going to keep on moving up that submission record.
Yeah, it was it was a nice little Bellator card. Of course, Bellator is in Italy this weekend. They've got basically three portions of a card. We've got a kickboxing card, then we've got Bellator Milan and Bellator 230, which does lead us into this week's MMA. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, there is so much MMA to take in. It all starts on Thursday with the PFL, the playoffs week one. It is the women's lightweight and men's welterweight. Then, of course, on Saturday, we've got Bellator, all their events in Italy. We've got the UFC show, also won championships. They've got, several notable names on those cards, and all wraps up on Sunday with Ryzen as they kick off their lightweight tournament. Patricky Pitbull is a part of that team. Being here in Tampa, obviously I'm in Tampa for the next 36 hours or so before I hop on a plane and head overseas to London for Bucks Panthers. But I will say this, the UFC Tampa card, I think top to bottom is a pretty nice fight night card that the UFC's put together.
Yeah, I think so. UFC Tampa, to me, I love the main event for sure. And I love the co-main event in terms of anytime you can watch Cub Swanson fight, It's a good time. But I love the main event. It feels like, you know, these fight night cards, you look and what you can ask for if you're going to pay a ticket for the show is a nice main event with some star power. You get that with Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Michelle Waterson for sure. And then you hope you get some bangers or some intriguing fights. And you look at Eric Anders, Gerald Meerschaert. That's exciting. Nico Price, James Vick. It is a good fight. And then the one I would really have circled that I would want to see has to be Amanda Ribas versus Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy the fact that she gave birth to her child 4 months ago. And she's already back in there. She's walking around lighter than she ever has. You know, I look at that, you know, like the main event, this is about, I will say it's like a validation type fight for Michelle Waterson. You know, she, you know, earlier this year, she was really making that push to, you know, get the title matchup. And my understanding, the UFC, just wasn't interested in doing that. And of course, you know, you mentioned about the champion, Zhang Weili. She's got a visa issue now. Apparently, she was supposed to come to the United States to do some media tours, but her visa application got denied. So we'll see what happens with that. Of course, you know, when she won the title, she had mentioned about visa issues for some of her coaches. And I had talked to some people that knew her and said, yeah, they really weren't sure exactly what the issue was. I haven't talked to anybody about this particular issue, but I mean, it's a big matchup there. Interesting story. I want to say it was last week, Cub Swanson talking about how he kind of had some trouble doing some jiu-jitsu training because he was fighting a Gracie and some gyms didn't want to let him in. You know, I think
that's amazing.
You know what I think could end up being just the fight of the weekend on that card?
Which one?
Nico Price versus James Vick.
Yeah, man.
Like that's just got, you know, I just don't see either one of those guys, you know, having a boring fight. I'm, you know, Davison Figueiredo, Tim Elliott, of course, it's Tim's first fight in nearly 2 years. You know, Matt Favola, who's actually a local kid here in Tampa, he's taking on Luis Pena. You know, he does do a lot of his training up in Long Island, but he is from Tampa. Actually, I saw last night one the Fox station here locally did a story on him. And, you know, it's unfortunate that I won't be able to be here, but that's what happens during football season. I miss a lot of these things. And I was thinking about this, like, I don't even know how I can watch England if I wanted to stay up. So this would be, I want to say, a main card start time in London at 1 a.m.?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm staying up for that.
Dude, if you go to London for work and you decide to watch a UFC fight night card that starts at 1 a.m., you've got poor life choices,
Jason. Well, here's the
thing. Jason.
So Friday's my day off in London. We land, mm-hmm. I get there Friday morning. Leave here Thursday night, land Friday morning. So Friday is like basically my day to do whatever I want to do. You know, and obviously a lot of it just depends on how tired I am. I know some of the boys have maybe talked about going up to Stonehenge, which I've done before. But I told the fellows, I said, hey, let's see how tired we are before we start committing to what we're doing. And then Saturday I go to the stadium to set up. And then, of course, Sunday's a game and fly right back after the game's over. So, yeah, I don't see myself. I mean, I was thinking about this. I was like, because I don't think ESPN Plus works internationally. I'm sure some of our international audience could definitely tell me the answer to that question. So I was like, because I was thinking, I was like, oh, I could probably just load this thing up on my computer and watch on the flight home.
Yeah, yeah. As you get, does ESPN Plus work in the Atlantic Ocean is my question. Or, you know, where is the international board boundary?
That's a damn good question. Where does, like, the firewall start it in?
Yeah. Is the best place for all streaming service, like, to live in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean so you get all of the country regulations? That's a good question, man.
Yeah, I don't I think it's a very good – I think it's a very nice fight night card. You mentioned about the Bellator card. I mean, look, there is not a ton that sticks out to you about that event. I mean, look, the fight that you're interested in the most is definitely Rafael Carvalho and Vadim Nemkov. I mean, you know, and you look at that light heavyweight division, and we'll see whenever Ryan Bader does defend that title. Vadim Nemkov is definitely a guy that you look at. Of course, Carvalho, the former 185-pound champion of the ONE Championship card. You know, got some known names. Obviously, DJ is a big part of that card. Brandon Vares fighting this weekend. Biliana Fernandez. So it's their 100th event. They're doing part one and part two of the event. The one with DJ actually will be on TNT. The car with Vera will be on BR Live. But, yeah, I mean, you mentioned a little earlier, that PFL car, and I think the reason that you ultimately have the most interest in it is it's the format. And look, you do have the welterweight fights. You know, they're going to fight, two times in the same night, but you're definitely, if you're PFL, you're just like sitting there going, please let Kayla Harrison, please let Sarah Kaufman win.
Yes. I mean, you'll take Kaufman losing as long as you get Harrison in the finals. Like, that's all you care about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't, that fight, obviously our opponents has a kickboxing background. I don't think for any stretch of the imagination that Mike Brown is going to tell Kayla Harrison to sit there and have a striking matchup against Fabian.
If not, he needs to get drug tested immediately.
Exactly. I think you're going to see a judo throw I would be surprised if it hits the second round. I really do. I mean, look, I think when you look at this season of the PFL, and we've talked about it all year, is the fight we all want to see is Kayla Harrison and Sarah Kaufman, and this thing has worked out perfectly for the PFL, the fact of these two girls win on Thursday night. You now get the fight that you honestly wanted to make right when this season started.
Yeah, yeah. And Pacheco is a tough matchup for Sarah Kaufman. I mean, these Kaufman and Pacheco are, to me, the two most battle-tested veterans in this whole tournament. So it could be close. Pacheco could pull off the upset. But I think, looking at it from the outside looking in here, I think PFL set up for a nice little final between Kaufman and Harrison. And the PFL playoff is just – it's a much more exciting fight card because you mentioned at the stakes. We're going to literally have the semifinals the same night of the welterweight tournament, and it makes all the sense in the world. Whereas you look at some of these other fight cards, and a lot of them look like showcase fights. Just like, clearly this guy's going to beat this guy because this guy's a star and they're trying to build around him. Or you get really sad stuff like Melvin Manhoff competing. I'm so done watching Melvin Manhoff fight just because he's taking so much damage.
Yeah.
So, it's as simple as that. Melvin Manhoff has provided me much enjoyment in K-1 and in mixed martial arts, but it's just gotten really sad. And, the sad talk hasn't ended here, but, I mean, like, if you're going top five fights of the weekend, I mean, there isn't a lot of good ones. If you look at all these cards, I mean, even, like, Ryzen, there isn't a lot there. To me, like, the top two fights, and I'm joking here, are like the welterweight semifinals that we don't know what they are yet. I feel like the semifinals, I'm just not digging the PFL welterweight quarterfinals. So like none of those fights are in my top five. I mean,
look, we've already seen Magomed Karamov versus Curtis already. We saw that the last stage of, the regular season. So, I mean, look, Magomed Karamov is no question. He is the guy to beat. We saw him last year and what he did. I mean, he's one of those guys that, hey, man, get that $1 million payday and get that payday as long as you can, bro. I mean, get that payday. But he is a guy that you do wonder how would he fare in the UFC or Bellator when you look at the 170-pound divisions in both those organizations. Ray Cooper, who was a star of last year, hasn't necessarily gone ideally for him, but he is – in the playoffs. So, I mean, to me, on Thursday night, because I think this is all on ESPN2, ESPN Plus, I believe.
Okay. I'm not sure.
So I know we will have Wi-Fi on our plane. So I don't know if I'll be, I think, hopefully, I can watch Rays Astros on the plane.
Yeah, hopefully you can watch the Astros send the Rays home on the plane.
Excuse me, I'm wrong. It's on Friday night. Friday night is a PFL show. I mentioned Thursday earlier. It's on Friday night. It'll be on ESPN Plus and on ESPN2.
And then if you are interested in what the bracket is, the number one seed is Clyco Franca. He takes on Andre Filho, and the winner of that fight we'll take on the winner of number 4, John Howard, versus 5, David Machado. So we'll get that fight. And then the other fight would be number 2, Magomed Karamov, versus number 7, Chris Curtis. The winner of that fight will take on Sadabusai and Ray Cooper. So,
yeah, get that name out there right.
Yeah, I know. I sounded like I just like had some type of moment there. The winner of the Magomed Karamov fight, Chris Curtis, and the winner of the Sai Cooper fight is probably going to be the fight on PFL I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah,
but, that's kind of cheating.
Yeah, and of course, they'll also have an event the following week, which will be the featherweights and lightweights. And then on October the 31st, interesting, you're doing an event on Halloween night, which is one of those nights that promoters always say you never do an event on. That'll be light heavyweights and heavyweights. But, look, you're tuning in because of Kayla Harris. I mean, to me, my number one fight of the weekend is Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Michelle Waterson. I expect Joanna Jędrzejczyk to win that fight.
I'm an idiot. I didn't even include the UFC fights on my top five. But, I mean, so my list is going to be a little different. But if I was doing the UFC fights, I would definitely include Waterson Jędrzejczyk. This is the fight to watch this weekend because there is so much on the line for Michelle Waterson. What stands in front of her is a shot at the championship. She beats Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She can rightfully call out the champion. For Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Jason, what stands in front of her is like her career. Mm-hmm. Michelle Waterson can take away her run at another championship in that fight. Jędrzejczyk is in a rut, and it's been a very, very long time since she's fought like Joanna champion. And Waterson, I mean, this is an ultimate crossroads moment for Joanna Jędrzejczyk. It's a must-win situation in order for her to return to form. So the stakes are high for this fight. My number one fight of the weekend, though, is God. Because, yeah, when I did my list, it was just all the non-UFC fights. I don't know why I didn't include UFC Tampa. But my number one fight of the weekend, I actually have Rafael Carvalho versus Vadim Nemkov as my top fight of the non-UFC cards. Just because it's a lot like, you know, taking your vitamins. You're not that excited about it. But logically, Nemkov has a lot of momentum.
It's a notable fight.
Really good. Yeah, it's a notable fight, which says a lot about this weekend. And Carvalho, former champion. So at Bellator 230, that's my number one fight for the non-UFC cards.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, you know, I'm interested, you know, I think the one championship card does have some interesting, aspects to it, to watch it there. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend. Now, Daniel, December 7th, you got any plans?
Oh, December 7th. Yes, I do. And yeah, let's talk about it.
You're going to make your way to Hidalgo and Tito and Alberto. I'm just going to call him Alberto Del Rio just because I think that's how most people know who he is. Not surprised that they are doing this on pay-per-view. Price point of $39.99. I don't know how many people are going to pay for that, but I think, you know, going to, you know, Texas obviously is one of the states that Combat Day goes to a lot. It's Texas, it's Arizona, and it's California. It would seem, you know, and you obviously would know it living there. It seems like it's kind of an ideal location to do this fight.
Yeah, man, it actually really is. We have a huge Hispanic population. Myself included, even though I don't know that much Spanish, I'm a disappointment to my family. So this fight, I mean, there was some scuttlebutt around, you know, I work at a news station, and I think we actually mentioned this fight card on our sportscast, especially for our Spanish. We have English and Spanish news.
Okay.
And we definitely mentioned this fight already on our Spanish newscast, like the day after it was announced. So it's a big deal in terms of, like, I think it's going to pull a nice crowd. Alberto Del Rio's a star, and people know who Tito Ortiz is. So I think Combate Americas is really going to go to this Hidalgo market often because there's a big population. You know, the Hidalgo market isn't about Hidalgo. It's about the Rio Grande Valley, which, like, altogether, where I'm from, the Rio Grande Valley is a pretty big market.
But, like, how would you, for someone like myself, obviously I've never been there.
San Antonio, honestly, I would say it's kind of like a lighter version of San Antonio.
Okay.
The traffic isn't that bad. Things are more spread out, but we're talking about, like, the way I would describe it is if there's no traffic to get from one end of the valley to the other takes about 90 minutes or 70 or 80 minutes. And that's what we don't have any traffic. So, and it's just city, small cities. It's just like, yeah. So it's a heavy population. There's a lot of money there. So it's a bigger market than it sounds for sure. But, And there's a lot of Hispanics, specifically Mexicans, that live in the area. A lot of people move to the Rio Grande Valley to put their kids in either get grant, you know, move and have their children here, live here, and then or just move. Their children are born in Mexico, but they bring them to America so that they can go to school in America. Mm-hmm. And that's real common, too. And it's a lot of people who really resonate with Hispanic culture. So you bring in someone like Alberto Del Rio, who was pretty famous as a luchador in Mexico before going to the WWE. And WWE was pretty popular among Hispanics as well. And then you can also bring along some of these other Hispanic names. I think Combate Americas has a really nice market here in Hidalgo. With that being said, crack cocaine is legal in Texas. I mean, these people on the commission doing crack cocaine to legalize this fight. Tito Ortiz and Alberto Del Rio? Are you kidding me, Jason? Are you kidding me?
For the fans who are not aware, Alberto has fought in MMA back in Pride. So I think we should.
Oh, so he's had a recent fight.
Yes. Well, like 2008, 2009, something like that.
This dude got murdered by Crow Cop.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a 210-pound contract weight fight. And the most interesting part about this, and also it's like, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, kind of tough to take this a little serious in a way. It's a winner take all title belt challenge. If Tito Ortiz wins, he gets Del Rio's WWE title. If Del Rio wins, he gets Ortiz's UFC title.
That's the stupidest damn thing I've ever heard in my life.
Now, like, okay, so look, Tito's going to win this fight. I think we can all sit there and say that.
Yeah, because Alberto Del Rio is an MMA fighter.
Does that mean Del Rio just doesn't care about his memorabilia of his WWE title, or does he have so many of them? You know, he has multiple of them that he doesn't care if he loses one.
He probably bought one on www.shopzone.com.
That would be hilarious if he's like, oh, screw it, I'm just going to buy one. Tito won't know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, he probably would. I mean, it's stupid, but it's kind of funny, but kind of stupid. I feel like WWE and UFC should just do a sting operation the day of the fight and be like, we are suing all of you for using our name and likeness in this promotion. Jesus.
But here's the interesting thing. So you're doing December 7th. It's the same night of the UFC Fight Night card in DC, which will be on ESPN. It's a week before UFC 245, which will have three title fights. It's 2 weeks after Deontay Wilder's pay-per-view fight. I'm sitting there going, man, you know, my guess is the buy rate will be probably with kind of the range of what Tito and Liddell did. And I just like,
I think it's going to be way less.
To me, I feel like, and I kind of got some heat on this on social media. Like if I was Combate, I would go to LFA and say, can we do a little co-promotion event?
Yeah.
Because amount of fighters LFA has, at least, you know, I mean, look, MMA is a niche sport, but there is a niche of the niche sport that is that hardcore fans that, you know, you put some good prospects on the undercard that it could sway them in a little bit. Am I going to put $40 down to watch this? Nope. I have no interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really, to me, it's not like a money thing. You know, I mean, I can afford it. It's not, you know. But it's more of a situation of like, it's like, no, I'm not spending $40 when I'm going to spend $60 a week later for three high quality UFC title fights.
It's a time investment thing, because if you put down $40 for a pay-per-view, you bet your ass you're watching the whole damn thing. I'm going to get my money's worth. So then you're going to be obligated to watch this whole card. Rather, if it was on TV, you could flip it on for the main event. So, you know, honestly, the time obligation is more valuable than the price. Dude, the fact that Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz bombed, these things should not be on pay-per-view. This is a far less interesting fight than Tito versus Chuck to the normal MMA audience. This fight's going to do, I think, pretty good in the gate. But this should have been on television or DAZN, for the love of God. Just put on DAZN.
Here's where I think they missed the boat.
What's that?
I think this fight should have been next week.
Why is that?
Because the Tito Chuck 30 for 30 special premieres on October the 15th.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point, dude. That's a hell of a point. Well,
Could you imagine if you had that thing debut and you're like, hey, Tito fights this weekend live on pay-per-view? Like, to me, that is where, you missed the boat, but timing, it just didn't work. I mean, look, I was, you know, I'm not shocked this is on the pay-per-view, but I was probably just as shocked that Fedor versus Rampage is not on pay-per-view. I thought that had money grab written all over it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it has to do with the timing, right?
I'm sure it's timing, and it's going to be live on Paramount and DAZN. It's going to be a part of this Bellator and Ryzen event that's going to be December the 29th. You know, they're labeling it as Bellator versus Ryzen. Just looking at the stare down pictures this morning between Fedor and Rampage, give me Fedor. I just think his speed is going to be the big difference.
Yeah, Rampage looked huge and not in a good way when you look at that stare down, Jason.
You think about, like, it was funny because when I got the when I woke up this morning, I saw the press release and the photo of Rampage was 205-pound Rampage, not the Rampage of right now.
Yeah, that's literally 2/3 of the Rampage of right now. I mean,
you look at him right now and you're sitting there going, clearly he's got to cut weight to get 265.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an important thing. It's just like Fedor is going to just be in better fight shape when these two fight, unless something radically changes. But I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
Rampage just looked like he's stepped off the horse and put on some weight, man.
Yeah, man, he is. He has put on some weight. Yeah, it makes you, it kind of makes you wonder if Rampage wins this fight. Are we about one step closer to Rampage Ryan Bader?
I mean, that's the trajectory.
Like, I feel like Scott Coker's sitting there going, I got this. I got this.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I did find it interesting that it did not take MMA fans very long to figure out that there is a fighter competing on the Bellator show at Mohegan that is an amateur porn star.
Really?
Yeah, Rebecca Bergman.
I mean, I know this,
actually,
but, yeah.
Here's the story. I actually interviewed her. Mm-hmm. When she was supposed to make her pro debut, and then someone said, hey, do you, if you want to know what she does, here's her stage name. And, I'm sitting there and I was telling somebody last night, I go, you know, Coker knows at this point what her part-time job is. And I'm like, Coker's probably sitting there going, oh man, if this girl can win, ooh, we might have something.
Yeah, man. Hey,
You know, Bellator will promote that.
Porn is popular, man. You know, it's a popular. Should hire more porn stars. Porn is good, man. I mean, not that I watch it that much, but you know, porn is good, man. I shouldn't say that too loud in my house.
I will tell you, it was one of those things of just because I knew, what she does. I was waiting to see how long it would take people to figure out of what it was. And I'm sure once they found her on Instagram, they were going to be like, oh, okay. And like literally was within like 24 hours of the fight getting announced.
Yeah. You never, ever doubt an MMA fan. You know, we should have like a little MMA pro wrestling recap because.
But okay. So I watched SmackDown on Friday night.
Yeah.
Great acting by Brock Lesnar. I'm just going to say that straight up.
Yeah, acting like he was scared of Cain Velasquez or what?
Yeah, like the way his face reaction was tremendous. I was like, oh, Brock is selling this good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he put Cain over. And you know, I guess I know they're doing a press conference Friday in Vegas. And I guess so they're going to do it the Crown Jewel event. It's going to be Cain versus
so
Brock
stupid.
And Strowman versus Tyson Fury.
They're idiots. Why would you do that show? Those two big matches in Saudi Arabia. That's so dumb. It's
The money that Saudi Arabia is paying the WWE probably.
Yeah, but here's the thing: you can tell Saudi Arabia, we'll give you a Hulk Hogan match or something. We'll give you Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. Kane versus Brock and Fury versus Strowman is gonna make you money in the United States.
Yeah.
That money from Saudi Arabia is already there. You can already give them some nostalgic BS smoking that, you know, you could have serviced them. But it's like, that's WrestleMania, you know? So that's nonsense.
And I see the crazy thing that Kane apparently wasn't under contract with WWE when he did that spot on Friday.
Wow, that's crazy. He has to have surgery still.
Here's a question on Cain Velasquez. You buy or selling? We never see Cain Velasquez inside the UFC octagon again.
I'm buying that because
I am too. I just don't think he's going to put him, you know, even though, I mean, look, obviously wrestling is what you have to put your body through is tremendous. I feel like his days in MMA are over. You know, he's exited the USC, USADA, anti-doping program. You know, he's been removed from the UFC ranking system. You know, to me, it's very clear. I think we have seen the end of Cain Velasquez. You know, and I've seen some highlights of what he's done in the ring. And Daniel, I mean, obviously you pay attention to this stuff way more than I do. I'm blown away with his athleticism.
Oh yeah. Unbelievable athlete. He's done a lot of things off the ropes that are very difficult to do. And especially for a big guy, and he's looked great. But I'll pivot, Jason. The biggest pro wrestling MMA thing for the MMA world wasn't that. It was Jake Hager debuting on All Elite Wrestling. And the reason why this is bigger for mixed martial arts is, A, Jake Hager is still actively competing in Bellator. Mm-hmm. All Elite Wrestling is going to be one great platform for him to become a big star. And if things go right for Jake Hager, he's going to be a big draw for Bellator. Because that wrestling audience is going to see him there. That's like low-key a big, big, big win for Bellator.
And look, I don't watch pro wrestling hardly ever. You know, growing up, I was a hardcore, you know, WWE, WCW, you know, fan. But I would tell you this. I watched AEW last Wednesday. I sat there and I wanted to see what they would do. And I mean, because you knew there was going to be some surprise. What surprised me the most about Jake Hager showing up is the fact of he's 3-4 weeks away from a fight. And that's kind of always been kind of my understanding is the agreement between Bellator and Hager is more about, hey, when you're, you know, 6 weeks out from a fight, you're not pro wrestling, even though it wasn't like he was taking a bump at all.
It was crazy because he did that and I saw that happened at night and at like 5 a.m. on his social media. He's already in the gym. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And also he's taking on Anthony Garrett. So it's a fight where it's not like he's taking on a high level guy yet.
Yeah. I've talked to Anthony before. I mean, Anthony's a big dude. He's athletic. I want to say Anthony's a former football player. You know, I've talked to him a couple of times, but Bellator is being very smart about how they match Jake Hager. I mean, they're not going to go up there and put him up against a legit, you know, guy who's got, you know, 10, 12, 13 fights. They're going to be very smart. I mean, you know, between Jake's, you know, his coaches and his management team, Danny Rubenstein, you know, look, they're not going to put him in a fight that, you know, that he's not ready for. And it's going to be, I mean, look, there's going to be a slow build there. I think there's no question about it. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, look, wrestling and MMA are intertwined. I mean, I think we all know that. I mean, there's no, but it is, I mean, but it does seem like, man, over the last, like, 2 years, just the amount of crossover we have seen from MMA fighters going to mixed martial arts. You think of Matt Riddle, you know, of what he's done. And, of course, he kind of came out against Dana White, you know, a couple of days ago. But yeah, man, it's an interesting time right now in MMA. But looking forward to it, you know, looking forward to catching most of this mixed martial arts this weekend on DVR, Daniel. And, you know, I'm looking forward to this afternoon. And of course, what people are going to hear here momentarily in a podcast, you know, going over to the fighter hotel. And, you know, I always, you know, kind of enjoy just sitting down with the fighters because, you know, when you're right next to, you know, somebody, to me, I think those conversations. So I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, look, I would say overall, I think this is a great weekend for mixed martial arts fans.
Absolutely, man. There's a little flavor of ice cream for whatever type of flavor you like.
Yeah. And of course, you know, next week on the podcast, we'll talk about everything that's going on. You know, I'll talk to you a little bit about my trip to London. Looking forward to that as well. But right now it is time for the interview portion of the show. As you're going to hear all my interviews with the UFC Tampa fighters, Eric Anders, Tim Elliott, and Thomas Gifford. Joining me now is one of the men that's going to be the opening fight main card ESPN Plus here in my hometown, Tampa. Usually we're on Skype talking, but it's good to have you in hometown, Eric Anders. Man, Eric, man, how's it going, man?
Man, it's good, man. I didn't know this was your house, man. I didn't know that you were from Tampa, man. It's a nice spot, man. I'm loving it here.
Yeah, literally, I live
10, 15 minutes from here.
Really?
Yeah. So when Ed's like, oh, this is where he's staying, I'm like, oh, man, it's like right by the house.
Yeah, you know? Man, it's a beautiful city, man. You know, it's a little wet. You know, it seems like they get that Florida 3 o'clock rain shower every day. But, you know, it's Florida, so, you know, paradise.
You're kind of used to it in Alabama, though.
Man, you know, Alabama, you know, it rains. When it rains, it pours. Like, it's like a torrential downpour. We don't get, like, that daily sprinkle, you know, that y'all get here. So, you know, when it rains in Alabama, it rains.
I mean, we're talking. It's Wednesday afternoon here. We're less than 48 hours from you weighing in. Like, and we always, you know, I think outside looking, we're like, okay, everything that's going on is just about the weight cut. Is that true, or is there other things going on?
For me, you know, that's not the main thing that I'm concentrated on, but obviously it's the first, you know, it's that has to happen first before the fight happens. So it is a main focus. This is probably the best my weight has ever been, the leanest I've ever been before a fight. So, man, I'm feeling good. Just got done working out, feeling great. Fast, explosive, reacting really well. So, man, so far this is the easiest weight cut that I've had. And, man, I'm actually kind of surprised where my weight's at now, considering how much I drink and eat, have drank and eaten today.
Any reason why you're leaner this time? I mean, was there any changes?
Man, you know, I've been fighting at 205, and I was, you know, not nervous, but, you know, I kind of had a conversation with myself. It's like, man, you put on a lot of muscle for, you know, to fight at 205, so this weight cut might not be the easiest thing, you know. But I think, you know, with the more muscle, the more water it holds. So, man, the water's just pouring out, and, man, I couldn't be happier with my weight right now.
I was watching an interview with James Lynch, and you kind of alluded to this fact of, like, you know, you've been going back and forth between 85 and 205, and you're at this point of, like, look, I've got to, you know, where am I going to make my title run? Was it a conversation you and Chris had that said, you know, 85 is where we need to be?
Man, you know, it just me, Jason House, and my head coach, Chris. You know, if you watch my middleweight fights compared to, you know, the light heavyweight fights, every time I hit one of these guys at middleweight, you know, they either go flying across the cage or end up on their back. You know, the same can't be said for, you know, the light heavyweights. Well, you know, I fought Thiago and, you know, hit him quite a bit. And, you know, he was still there. Didn't really do much against Roundtree. And, you know, obviously what I did against Vinicius in my last fight. I just think for where my skill set is at right now, middleweight is the spot for me to be at.
It's been a while since that Thiago fight. Is there a part of you that now looks it back and then the way he performed against John Jones of, like, now you look back at that fight and say, man, you know, that's how well he did against John.
You know, I think that, like, styles make matchups, you know. So just because he did so well against John Jones on one leg doesn't mean that I would, you know, have the same success against John Jones, if that makes sense. So, man, he's a hell of a fighter, man. Been around a long time, got a lot of experience. So I think that he fought John Jones at the right time in his career. You know, it sucks that he got hurt, you know, in the fight. But, you know, it's a fight and things happen. So I will say, I think that outside of John Jones, his other light heavyweight fights, I think that him and I had the most entertaining fight. So I do think that I you know, I would do well at light heavyweight, and I'm very open to fighting. Man, you guys know me, man. I'm down to fight whoever, whenever, at whatever weight class. So, you know, whatever name comes across the contract is, you know, I'm gonna sign it, and we're gonna meet up and do the damn thing.
Obviously, you know, throughout your athletic career, you have seen leg injuries, knee injuries. I get to see it, you know, traveling with Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, I see guys coming out of that locker room, you know, and like, there's you see things,
and
you can see kind of the battle, man, and knowing what it takes to be at this level. When you look at Thiago being on essentially one leg, like, can you even fathom how he did that?
Man, you know, there's a lot of adrenaline and a lot of things to block pain when you're in the middle of a fight, man. And, you know, what I think is the most amazing thing about it is usually that stuff wears off as the fight goes on. Man, you see guys get the adrenaline dump, you know, they come out fast, hard, and they get tired 2 minutes into the fight. So, you know, when the fight first starts, you know, you kind of understand, like, you know, that fight or flight response is kicking in, going really hard. But, you know, he did that in the first round and then fought four more rounds like that. So I don't know how much pain he was in when he was fighting, but I would have to imagine an ACL injury is, you know, I think he tore a lot of stuff in his knee, you know, a couple ligaments and tendons. So, man, I think that, you know, he's a tough guy. You know, he's got a great story. And man, I think he really wanted that belt. So, you know, he was able to fight through it.
We had a guy on Sunday break his arm in the game and still played. Offensive lineman.
Oof. Man, you know, you always hear stories like that. He's like, Emmitt Smith played with a broken leg, and this guy played with a broken neck. And this is a man. You just be like, man, whatever, man. That's bull.
Is that just adrenaline? Is that the best way to describe it?
Man, no, because at first, yes. But that stuff wears off after, you know, a few minutes. You know, to play 60 minutes of a game of a, you know, football games last 3 or 4 hours. So that, I don't know when he broke his arm in the game, but
second quarter, apparently.
Yeah. So he played an hour and a half to 2 hours of football. Yeah. An offensive line where you have to like jam people and use your hands. So, man, you know, I think the human body is one of the most remarkable things on earth. And you can really do anything that you want with your body under a lot of different circumstances. If you have like the right mental, if you're in the right mental state.
I was thinking about this fight you have on Saturday against Gerald Mershard, and obviously people think of his grappling aspects. It made me think about when we started talking, when you were an amateur, and I remember I had this stock photo of you at a jiu-jitsu competition. Is this finally the fight where we could see the jiu-jitsu come out in you?
Man, you know, I'm a brown belt, purple belt, world champion. So, you know, I'm not scared of anybody on the ground, you know. That's just not why I prefer the fight to take place. But if I do find myself on my back, if I do find myself on top, up against the cage, I am more than confident in my ability to either get back to my feet or sink in a submission to myself.
Obviously, we have talked about the various camps you have gone to, the cross train at Factory X, obviously your home gym there in Alabama, but you went down to Fortis. Was this something that kind of, you know, you just kind of saw what they were doing and you kind of wanted to see what they offered and how he can maybe expand your game?
Man, you know, Coach Safe is a really good friend of mine. And, you know, I fought on some cards with him and got to know the fighters. And, you know, man, just decided to take a trip down there. And, you know, it's like a 9-hour drive, which for me, that's, you know, that's nothing. So I just got on 20 West and, you know, went to the gym. Loved the way they train. Loved the coaching. And the room, the talent in the room, it's, you know, I think he's got like 16 guys in the UFC or some phenomenal number like that. You know, so I got to work with, you know, bigger, stronger, more athletic guys like Uriah Hall, Ryan Spann, who's also fighting this weekend, Lonzo Manifield, a bunch of people. Got to watch Miles Johns get ready for his fight in Canada, Steven Peterson get ready for his fight in Mexico, which he probably got, you know, knockout of the year with that, you know, that spinning back fist, or it's certainly in contention. So, man, you know, it's man, it was an awesome atmosphere, and everybody was truly there to help everybody get better.
I mean, I think the record in like last year or so, 15-5 in the UFC. Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy number, and he is one of the realest coaches I think I've seen on fight night, because I was listening to Josh Thompson's podcast, and he was talking about in corners. He goes, I had various cornermen, but there was always one constant, and that was Bob Cook. He goes, because Bob was a straight shooter. You come back after a round, you'd be like, yeah, won that round. You may not have won that round. And he talked about a fight against Gill, mm-hmm. where he said, Bob looks at me at the end of the fourth and goes, you got to knock him out. You're losing.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are the type of people you got to have in your corner.
Yeah, yeah. Man, you know, I think the corner, obviously every fighter is different, right? Kosei is probably not a match for every fighter, right? But the fighters he is a match for, the thing I look for in a corner man is honesty and, you know, not necessarily like, because, you know, I hear other people corners like, you know, kick, punch, you know, left hand, right hand, jab, cross. It's like, it's not about, like, one, he hears you saying that. Your opponent hears you. But when you come back to the corner, you know, I want my corner to tell me what that guy's doing, or his hands are low, or, you know, he's doing this. Some things that I may not necessarily pick up on or see, or just little minuscule things. When I get back to the corner, hey, he's dropping his hand after his jab. Hey, he's doing this. You know, I've trained, you know, I know what I'm doing. I know, you know, what to do kind of thing. So just give me the little cues, you know. So that's why me and Chris work so well together, just because, you know, he's kind of like safe, but a little more mellow. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't yell, but he's brutally honest, lets me know what's up and where I'm at in the fight. And, you know, I had to go out there and get wins.
Of course, you know, you got Gerald here. If you had to outline one thing, key to victory, is there one particular thing you go, I have to do this to win?
Don't get choked. I think, you know, because, man, the remarkable thing about Gerald and the thing that, you know, you just can't, you know, it speaks volumes of him is that no matter how the fight's going for him, where he's getting, you know, beat up or he's winning the fight, as long as there's time left on the clock, you're at risk of getting choked. So I think, you know, most of his submissions have come by choke. You know, he just beat Trevin Giles, probably losing the fight. Last few seconds of the fight wraps up a choke. And the thing is, you know, you catch him catching people with these chokes and they're doing the right thing. You know, Trevin Giles had his head on inside on a single leg and still got choked out. You know, so he kind of lures people into the grappling game and then he just kind of pounces. And that's just not a game that I'm going to play with him.
I mean, obviously, both of you fought for Valor Fights. I don't think it was on the same card, though, right?
No, I think
it was in the same time range, though.
Same
right?
time. I think I fought. I remember I was trying to fight a dude named Sid Wheeler.
Yeah.
And they gave him the fight, and he ended up choking out Sid Wheeler. And I was like, man, who the hell is Gerald Mershart? Or, and, you know, obviously, you know, I'm sure like everybody struggles with his name at first. I was you know, who is this guy? So that's the first time he popped up on my radar. And then either the fight after or the, you know, soon after that, he got signed. And then I got signed, you know, a few months later, I believe. So, you know, I've known who he is and, you know, what he's about for quite some time now.
Obviously, we know you're a world traveler. You and the wife got any plans after this fight's over?
Yeah, she's competing in Latvia. She does the bodybuilding fitness model thing, and she's got a competition in Latvia at the beginning of November. Super excited to go to Latvia. Not in November, though. I'm sure it's going to be cold. You know, it's close to Russia. Everybody who's tried to invade Russia past September has literally frozen to death. Napoleon, Alexander the Great. So I'm sure it's going to be bitter cold. First stop when I get off the plane is to go to a jacket store. I feel like, you know, over there, or not even, like even in Chicago, you have to have a jacket from there for it to be warm, you know. Uh-huh. So, man, but I'm sure it'll be a good time, man. You know, I won't be cutting weight or, you know, doing any of that. So I'll get to try all the food and, you know, beers and stuff that they have to offer.
I think I have one big coat just because of traveling around the NFL.
Sure.
You know if you're going to a cold weather game. Because I always tell people, worst thing is, once your feet gets cold, you're screwed.
It's over with. It's a wrap. And I just imagine, we went to Croatia in the summertime. Beautiful, beautiful country. And hot, you know, humid. So I imagine they have that damp air, that wet cold, which is, you know, beyond miserable. So, man, super excited to go see that part of the world and, you know, have a new experience.
Of course, look forward to seeing your fight. I don't think I can watch your fight live.
You'll be in
London. 5 hours ahead. So that's like 1 a.m.?
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I'm getting up that late.
Get the coffee ready. Well, you'll be up all day with the
NFL. I was thinking about this. It's like, I'm like, okay, dude, can you get ESPN Plus internationally?
I don't know, man.
Like, I don't know.
Pandora doesn't work in other countries.
My backup plan is have it load up on the computer on the flight back on Sunday night.
Yeah. That's probably the next best thing, although I'm sure you'll have seen all the results and stuff.
See, that doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
It's more of like you know, obviously during football season, I don't get to watch a lot of this stuff live. I'll just put a tweet out there, say, hey, what were the great fights? So I know. And people will like say, stay away from this one. Now watch this one. Like, I was watching the Larkin Kreshkov fight in Bellator last week. Anyone who's not seen that fight, amazing fight. Mm-hmm. Just two guys going to war. You know,
Larkin won, right?
Yeah, he won a split decision. He Kreskov got him pretty good in the first round, but he came back stormed in the second round.
Nearly
finished the fight.
Man, that dude's good, man. You know, that guy used to fight at heavyweight. Now he fights at, welterweight. So he's like one of those Jared Cantonier guys who's probably naturally a bigger guy or was a bigger guy. And then probably got serious about his diet and cardio and stuff and started dieting down. And man, I think that's probably the best move for those two guys.
I mean, look at Rumble now.
But, man, he was probably a heavyweight to begin with, man.
It's still amazing to me he made 170.
Man, me too. He said something about – or he put a Throwback Thursday picture on Instagram of him weighing in at 170. And I was like, dog, he's got to be 250 now. And I was like,
I would say at least 250.
I was like, man.
Because there's no way he can make 205. No way.
How did you do that? How? But, you know, apparently he went through, you know, he I think back then, you know, people were just still sitting in the sauna for, you know, 4 or 5 hours to make weight and sweat and, you know, really put themselves through it. I think now, with all the science and research and stuff that's going into weight cutting and performance and stuff, that, man, he would have been a 205er the whole time. 85 minimum.
Did you, you know, obviously you played football growing up. Did you ever cut weight to make weight for, like, peewee football?
Nah, I was super thin until I hit puberty, man. I've been this height, 6'1", 6'2", since I was, like, 13, but I wrestled at, like, 169 or 170 or something. Okay. So, and I didn't cut any weight for that. So, you know, I was a super thin, I would say lean. You know, I wasn't, like, all bony and scrawny and stuff. I still had a little bit of muscle tone. But once I hit puberty, I stopped growing up. Start growing out.
Final thing, you waiting for LSU to come on the schedule?
Oh man, you know, man. I just love the way both teams are playing, man. You know, LSU kind of does, you know, up and down over the years, but man, they look really solid this year. And man, the thing I'm looking to the most is not only that game, is how the season shapes up at the end, because man, I don't think they're ever gonna let two teams from the same conference play in the playoffs, let alone a championship game. So,
but think about this, though.
I just want to see how that works out.
Four of the top six teams on the SEC right now. If Florida goes out and beats LSU on Saturday, they're a top five team.
Ah, man.
I don't think they will.
Nah, the way they played again, who'd they play last
Auburn.
Week? Auburn. The way they.
If Auburn can't run the ball, they're not good.
Yeah, well, man, they had a lot of miscues. It was a sloppy game. They did edge out a win, which at the end of the day is the ultimate goal, but. Man, you have to play solid football, fundamental football against Bama. So, if they go out there and play, and LSU's probably on the same level. So, if they go out there and have all those miscues and turnovers and stuff and sloppy play, LSU's going to run away with it.
Yeah, it's a fun time of the year. It's a fun time of the year, of course.
I'm really looking to see how Oklahoma does, because I'd like to see – Jalen Hurts and Alabama, and
that'd be crazy
in the championship. And
he's a different player,
man. He's clicking on all cylinders, and man, in my opinion, he's leading the Heisman race. He would get my vote for the Heisman right now, just because, you know, Tua, top three offensive line in the nation, certainly without a doubt, the number one receiving core in the nation. You know, so. I got to give it to Jalen Hurts right now, but, you know, it's a long season. Well, I guess they're halfway through now, so we'll see how the rest of the season shapes up.
Yeah, I think this week will mark the halfway season for me for the NFL season. I think this week's week 9 or 10.
Wow, 20, man.
When you put it in the preseason game.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, man, that's still a lot, man. You know, that's a lot of wear and tear, a lot of games
the body. Okay. Last time we played a home game in Tampa, September 22nd. Our next home game is November 10th.
No off weeks?
We have one bye week. Oof. So we started 2 weeks ago in LA, New Orleans last week, London now, bye week, Nashville, Seattle.
And the road games, man, you know, those guys are living out of a hotel and, you know, traveling. That's a long flight from, you know, London to.
It's like seven and a half hours.
Yeah,
we take off here Thursday night, land Friday morning in London.
and then play on Saturday and then get on a plane.
Yeah, the
Saturday
key. Yeah, the key is
or
yeah.
Sunday night or Sunday, Sunday morning.
Right after the game, we'll get on the plane.
Oh, yeah,
head back.
On Sunday. That's right.
We'll be back early Monday morning.
To play again on Saturday, man. But you know the NFL, man. You know it's a little bit different, man. They like their practices. It's not like a college practice. You know they do a lot of like walkthroughs. You know I don't think they do a whole lot of hitting in practice. No. So you know they may be a little banged up for the game, but they'll have some time to recover and get
it's
their feet.
It's those Thursday games, man.
Yeah.
Could you imagine playing Sunday and Thursday, especially from in the trenches, guy?
We I think. I'm pretty sure we played on Thanksgiving Day in 2009. So we had played that Saturday. And then, so obviously we got an extra day, but at the end of the day, man, that's
that one day's a big,
it's a big thing. Yeah, I bet.
But Eric, man, as always, man, I appreciate your time. Of course, everyone knows all your social media and of course those sponsors that are helping out, man.
Yeah, you guys can find me anywhere, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Eric Anders, ERYKANDERS. Big shout out to Infinite CBD, EW Motion Therapy, and Rev Gear for, you know, keeping things moving, injury-free, and supplying me with the best gear.
There was my conversation with Eric Anders. We're now joined by Thomas Gifford's second UFC fight, just like the first one in Florida again.
Yeah,
Some people might look at that and say, maybe you go, oh, man, first one didn't go my way. Let me not go to Florida again. But you're like, no, let's just go.
Oh, no, it's like a redo for me. I got to get my respect back, you know. I mean, I wanted Florida to love me, and now they're going to because I got a second chance, and I'm going to show them what's up. I've been at Factory X for 5 months, and I'm a totally different fighter than I was when they see me last.
I was listening to a couple of interviews you did, and you talked about Mark Montoya, of how kind of he has developed you since you came there. Is there something you see in you physically, mentally, about how you're different now as opposed to before you went there?
It's mostly my fighter IQ. It has went way up compared to what I was. Like, I used to box, and I'm a black belt in kickboxing, and I mean, I was doing good on the regional scene, and I was doing great with my jiu-jitsu, but when I got there, that UFC level was totally different. I started setting up more shots. I started feinting. I started I'm way better at my takedowns now. I have... when I was shooting my takedowns, I would shoot to the far side hip with the head on the wrong side, and they'd just turn and put me on my back, you know. And now I'm shooting to the near side hip, and I'm actually bringing my leg around and cupping the knee. That way they fall instead of just being able to sprawl backwards. I mean, it's just I'm more aware of the fight can go and what to do when they're doing something.
But obviously, it's fight week's been an interesting week for you. I mean,
Definitely back and forth.
You get the call from your manager, Jason House. Yeah, hey, Brock's out. I mean, is the first initial thought is like, hey, man, are they going to give me another fight? Is that kind of the mindset?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been since April since I had my last fight, and I mean, I quit my job and I got a couple sponsors, but nobody really sponsors the up-and-coming UFC fighter until I make a big name for myself. And I've just been milking it by trying to stretch 10 grand out for so long. But, I mean, it only lasts for so long. So, yeah, I really needed a fight. And that's the most thing that worried me was financially.
And I heard you on an interview, you said, look, I understand. I lose this fight. This could be the end of my UFC run. I mean, is that more about just being – brutally honest with yourself? Because, you know, a lot of fighters might say, you know what, I'm gonna get at least three fights. Mm-hmm. Or is it more of like, I'm gonna put this pressure on myself, and so I understand what's on the line?
Yeah,
here.
I'm putting pressure on myself because I was planning on winning the first UFC fight. I didn't want to go 0-1. I mean, I was on a 5-fight win streak and I wanted to keep it going. Yeah. But then, I mean, I met somebody who was better than me, and then that day, you know. But now that I've went to Factory X and I've been with Mark Montoya and we've been working all my skills just to better myself, and it's just I feel like a whole new fighter than what I used to be. Because I used to go in there and be like, land your punches, land your jab, he takes you to the ground, tap him out. Now I got a game plan, I got everything set up, but now it's turned around and changed on me. So now I'm gonna have to implement a different game plan, and I'm gonna have to work it out within the 4 days, because I mean, I'm in the same boat as Mike Davis. I didn't know I was gonna fight him, he didn't know he was gonna fight me, and now we're both like scrambling to find a game plan and put one together. But I got all faith in Mark Montoya.
Is this more about this, hey, it's about me of what I'm doing in there, as opposed to, you know, hey, Mike's going to do what he's going to do? I mean, is it more about that emphasis of, okay, I've got to worry about me. I can't worry about, obviously you're worried a little bit about what he's going to do or try to do, but is it more about, hey, the focus has got to be on me?
Oh, definitely. I got to go in there and I got to impress myself. I got to prove to myself that I belong here. Like, cause last fight, after we got done with the fight, Roosevelt was like, you belong here, man. Don't let anybody tell you different. You're a tough sucker. And I was like, yeah, I didn't take that. But now I got to prove that to myself. I'm putting more pressure on myself because of that. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to be two and done, you know. I want this UFC to be a long career. I want to make plenty of money. I want to take care of my family. I want to have my kids' college tuition paid for, you know. And this is the way to do it. I'm not very good on the books, but I'm good at fighting. And I mean, this is the way to do it.
You mentioned about quitting your job, and I know we talked about the last time we talked about what you did. Was it a no-brainer decision, or was it kind of like, okay, I've got to do this, but man, you know, financially, you know, I got to manage my money properly.
My father told me, he goes, son, don't you worry about money. He said, I'll take care of you no matter what. And he can barely walk, but he's still out there in the log woods taking care of me. He paid my rent this month because I couldn't make it. You know, I mean, I got all the support behind me, but yeah, it was definitely a no-brainer. I said, I got to get on this UFC level. I got to go out of Arkansas, and I got to get to where I can be on this UFC level and take these guys on, because people are like, oh, regional scene, I'm fixing to make it to the UFC. I'm going to get on Contender Series. Yeah, it's definitely a big jump, but people don't realize it because they think that they're a good fighter. But there's definitely levels to this.
You know, obviously, Arkansas, we're seeing more and more fighters have come into the UFC, yourself, Bryce Mitchell, there was a couple other on the Contender Series we have seen. Do you always kind of look like, you know, hey, I want to be the face of Arkansas MMA?
Yeah, definitely. And I want to bring everything back home, and I want to give the younger fighters in Arkansas a chance to be able to be on the UFC level before they even get here. You know, I could take all my knowledge back to Arkansas later on in my life when my career is done, and I can make them successful in the fight game, and it wouldn't take them 10 years like it took me.
Yeah. When you think about the journey, this 10-year journey, like when you think about like your first pro fight, like is there something that sticks out to you about that fight?
Yeah, really. I come in there and I was on a different level than he was. When I went pro, I fought a pro fighter that was 5-2. He was super good at jiu-jitsu, and I took it to myself to prove to him that I was better at jiu-jitsu than him, and I wanted to prove that I was on a different level. And I went out there in style, and I tapped him out with an armbar because he's the armbar king. So, yeah, that really put a spot on me, because just the fact that I'm from Arkansas, I come from a logging background. I'm pretty much a nobody here, you know, but I got to make a name for myself, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm a hard-headed country boy that's coming in here to bang with anybody, and I can stand and bang with anybody. I can tap out anybody. It's going to be that way no matter what.
We're talking, we're less than 48 hours from weighing in. Mm-hmm. You mentioned about, hey, you know, it was Monday when I got this new opponent.
Yep.
You mentioned about, hey, we're, you know, the team is compiling a game plan. Is this week essentially about that, just kind of a cram session essentially, and also, you know, making weight?
Not really. I started dieting early. As soon as I had the fight, I started dieting. I heard about it 4 or 5 weeks before I had the fight, and I knew that I had to be on weight, because last time I cut 10 pounds and it was horrible and I hated it. But now I'm only 5 pounds from weight. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling strong. And now it's all about the game plan.
You mentioned about, you know, obviously going out to Factory X. I've got to imagine Mark Montoya will be the head coach in the corner.
Oh, yes, sir.
You know, you see a lot of different coaching styles.
Uh-huh.
How's his coaching style different than other coaching styles you've been around?
Well, it's kind of like we're family. He don't come in there and he don't say what you're doing wrong and fix it and stuff. He tells you exactly what you're doing wrong. He tells you exactly what you need to do, and he makes you go perfect it. And if you're not perfecting it, he's like, you're still doing it wrong. And he busts our balls on it, really. He comes straight up to us, looks us in the eyes, and he tells us exactly what's wrong with us and exactly what we're doing and exactly what we need to do or what his preference is. And we look up to him as a father figure and a coach, you know. I mean, we're family, and he treats us exactly like we're his sons. And that's a real big blend to me. And most coaches, they teach you what you want, they tell you what they know, and then you go off somewhere else and they never see you again, you know. They don't focus on you, period.
Are you your biggest critic, or is Mark?
Most likely Mark, because I mean, I think, oh, I'm doing this good. Oh, I'm doing that good. Cause I can always see the light at the end of the tunnel. But he was like, no, you're still doing this wrong. So you got to do this. I'm like, yeah, but I'm doing this. That don't matter. You're still doing this wrong and you're going to mess up and get caught, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, he's not afraid to say it and put it out there on point.
Is that sometimes tough to hear?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you hate it when coach calls you on the phone and you're like, dang. What I do now, you know, and you got to hear that stern in his voice. And then, you know, later on in the gym, you're going to have to be face to face with him.
Yeah.
So if you say something stupid or over the phone, you get a little mad, a little pissed off. You can't take it out on Mark because he'll come and look you in the eyes. And that's when you're like, oh, man, you know, you're right, coach. You busted my balls. I'm going to do it. You know, it's just it's really just the father mentality he has. And I mean, he takes real good care of us. And I mean, he knows how it is to be a fighter because he's been through it before.
You mentioned about, you know, hey, I'm feeling much better heading this one in terms of your weight. Was there something you did once you got this fight with strength conditioning that has put yourself in this position as opposed to where you were in April?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I went back to Factory X, I stayed in the fighter house with Devontae Smith. And he was like, man, you eat like crap. I can't believe you can perform like this and eat. How do you drink Dr. Pepper and sweet tea all the time and still do this? Be like, man, it's just what I've done my whole life. And he was like, man, just try it for a week. Cook your food with me and just like see how I do it. And I mean, I went to King Supers with him and we started cooking food together and we started hanging out together. And now I feel good and better every day at practice. I feel amazing, you know. He's like, it's because of the food you eat. And I didn't think it was that big of a deal eating McDonald's because it's definitely packaged and sitting there for a long time. Yeah. But I get it fresh. I cook it myself. And, I mean, I feel better that I actually put in some work and I'm enjoying something that I worked for, you know. And that's really the difference I put. I've been cooking my food. I've been keeping my meals. I ain't been meal planning or, like, doing nutrition stuff. I've just been eating what I like to eat because that's the easiest stuff for me to cook.
Has there been something incorporated into your diet that you've been eating that you had never ate before?
No, not at all. I grew up on pork chops, baked beans, and macaroni and cheese, and that's usually my diet.
There's nothing wrong with mac and cheese.
Exactly. Everybody says I need more protein, but I mean, that's just what I like to eat. I like to eat, put the beans and the mac and cheese together, and then I eat meat in between that, you know? I mean, I grew up on it. I'm a country boy. That's what we live off of.
Is there, once the weigh-ins are over, is there like a go-to meal, like to get back in the stomach? Like, I've talked to guys say, you know what, I talked to one fighter, he goes, I've got to find Olive Garden. He goes, that's my thing. He goes, no matter what town I'm fighting, I got to find Olive Garden. Is there anything for you, like, you know, you got to go to?
Yeah, and it got taken away from me. As soon as I met Mark, he's like, what do you want to eat after the fight? I was like, man, I got to get some chicken. I got to get some KFC. He was like, oh, no. He's like, we ain't doing no fried food. He goes, you got to eat healthy until after Saturday. He said, Saturday night, Sunday, you can have anything you want. But before then, you got to eat healthy. You got to stay clean. And I mean, it kills me. Last time he had my manager watching me and I was like, man, I'm going to sneak something. No, I didn't even get to sneak nothing. I had fajita chicken and I got to dip it in some ketchup, you know. It's just because I love chicken that much.
Yeah. With you, I can, you know, give me some good fried chicken, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All about it.
KFC,
you know?
Famous bowl, that's my favorite with a Dr. Pepper.
You know, when it comes to this fight on Saturday, and obviously it's a lot of things have changed, but is there one big key to victory for you?
Definitely keeping my hands up and keep my feet moving. I have a bad tendency to stand tall instead of keeping my base and using my power. And now that I've been with Mark for 5 months, he's always, don't get tall, don't get tall. And now he don't even have to say it no more because he knows I'm going to be in that stance. I've come equipped with the way that he keeps me to stay low on my base and use my power.
Now, is he doing anything unique, like pool noodles, hitting you to make sure you stay low?
No, but we've been working on my wrestling, and it's like, he's like, I mean, the floor is lava. As soon as I get taken down, the only thing he says is, get up, get up, get up. He's been making me wear big gloves when we spar and when we roll, so I don't go for submissions, so I can't use my hands. And if I can't use my hands, I can't do submissions, you know. I can't grab their wrist, and I can't grab their foot or something like that. I can't twist like I normally do. But when I have them big gloves on, it makes me get up. It makes me push on the head. It makes me get up. And that's really been a big factor to me because now I can get up against any wrestler that I've been against.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, people have been getting to know you. We know about, you know, from Arkansas. You mentioned I'm a country boy. You're out in Colorado. Is there anything about you that the UFC fan would maybe be surprised to know?
Yeah, when I was 5 years old, I got my nose ripped off by a dog. And I had plastic surgery on my nose. And everybody's like, man, does that not hurt? Is that like your nose is fake? I'm like, no, it's not fake that I know of. I think they pieced it back like an eggshell and then let it grow back together when I was young. But that's a little small fact about me that nobody really knows because I got this scar. You can barely see it.
Yeah, you can barely
see
it.
Yeah, exactly. It's going away with time. But yeah, back in the day, when my face gets red, it pops out really hard.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you like... no good with dogs, like you're not, or is it?
I love dogs. I'll get in any dogs. I don't care if they're barking and growling at me. I'll still walk up and touch them because I know that he's just doing that out of fear, like trying to get me away. But I try to be a dog whisperer. If any dog or cat doesn't like me, it's a challenge for me to get them to like me, you know.
I have a beagle. And so, like, if someone comes over to, like, the Amazon delivery guy, he'll bark up a storm. Mm-hmm. That guy came in, all he's doing is pet him. He wouldn't do anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Somebody that she's misunderstood and she has Tourette's. She will walk in a room wagging her tail, showing her teeth, smiling, and she'll growl. But that's her hello, you know. Just a random room, even by herself. She will walk. If she eats food at any time, she could be in a room by herself. She'll growl. She can be in her cage by herself out in the dark. She'll growl at her own food. Like, it's just, I think it's when, because she was a shelter dog, and when I got her, she was found in a house all by herself, all mangy and like all, I mean, malnourished big time. And I just think that the people who had her really didn't treat her right, you know. Yeah. And I mean, I understand that she's a little bit skittish and scared, but nowadays she'll walk in the room and everybody's like, oh, that's just the cutest little growl. You're so loving. Like she will lick you to death. And she's not vicious until you make her mad.
My buddy's got a pit bull. Same exact way. A sweetest dog. I don't think I've ever heard him bark.
See, I wish my dogs wouldn't bark.
I mean, pit bulls, they obviously, there's a bad stigma about
them. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Buddy's catty. He just sits there, just pet him. Mm-hmm. Let's go for walks.
Yeah.
It's simple, you know. It's,
I got a friend, Jesse Hancock. He's got a service dog that pit bull stands up to my hip. He is a monster. He's got to be 100-something pounds. And he won't bark. He won't growl. He'll just sit there and he'll chill. You can pet him, pull his tail, slap his ears, poke his ears, you know, little kid stuff because he's around kids all the time. You could ride him and he wouldn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the sweetest pit bull ever. It's just, it's all about the owner.
Yeah. My dog thinks he's a big dog. So I live next to a police officer who's a canine cop.
Oh, okay.
And so he will literally go in the backyard and start barking. I was just going, no. You're not a big dog.
Yeah. once the fence disappears, he's going to be like, oh, no.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, man. But yeah. One thing I say about, and I've been a dog owner for almost a year now, is you can have the worst day in the world. You come home with that dog, all they want is love.
Exactly.
And you completely forget about all the crap you've been going through all day long.
Exactly. You just want to get home to your dogs, just like kids. If you had a kid and you miss them, you want to get home to them. Once you're home, it really don't matter what's up. It's just, hey, I'm home with my kid. Everything else is out the window.
Exactly.
My day is over. I am done. Tomorrow is a new day. I'm going to make sure that he's okay.
But, of course, we got your fight Saturday night. I know you're excited. Of course, let everyone know the following on social media and, of course, the sponsors that are helping out.
Oh, yeah. On Facebook, you can follow me, Thomas the Young Lion Gifford. And on Instagram, it's Thomas_Gifford_MMA. And on Twitter, it's the Young Lion MMA.
And there was my conversation with Thomas Gifford. Now we are joined by Tim Elliott, back in action, nearly 2 years since the last fight. Obviously bouncing back from that injury. Was there ever a point in the last year and a half where did you ever think, like, am I going to be able to get back in there?
A lot. I was really worried right from the beginning. I knew that my injury was pretty significant. But I had a really good surgeon. I traveled to L.A. to get my surgery. I have the Performance Institute. I have Heather Linden and the best physical therapist that money can buy. And I get to use them every day. So any time where I felt like, hey, maybe this is something I'm not going to be able to do again, I just, you know, I looked at all the lucky blessings that I have, like being in Vegas with the PI and, you know, having the girlfriend that I do. She helped take care of me through the whole thing. And there was some downtimes, but for the most part, I knew, like, I had good people behind me and I knew that I want to fight and that it's something that I was going to do one way or another, and, you know, now I'm back.
I thought it was interesting. You had a tweet where you said, going on 15 fights under UFC banner, just as excited for this one as it was my first. Being injured, it sucked, but it's opened my eyes. I've been digging and clawing to get a fight. Just being in the UFC isn't enough for me. I need to fight. You know, I guess people who are just seeing that tweet can maybe take that different ways. Can you kind of explain what the point you were trying to get across was?
I mean, I've had like opportunities and offers of like, hey, you can come do this to make some money, or hey, you can go do that and make some money, or you can come take pictures, and like, that's all good. And I know fighters, like, if you're injured, you've got to find a way to make some money, but like, that's not what I'm here for. I'm not a model. I don't want to sign things. I don't want to endorse things. I want to fight. And that's what I'm here to do. Some guys are just happy with being signed by the UFC, and like, that's their goal, is to be a UFC fighter. But that's not my goal. I want to fight. I love to fight. It doesn't matter if it's for the UFC or for whoever. It's something that like I'm destined to do, and like I gravitate toward that. So I see these guys who get in the UFC and they have maybe one or two fights, and then all they want to do is take pictures, and like they don't want to fight necessarily, because if they lose, that means a shorter time in the UFC. All they're trying to do is put like time clicks up on their UFC table. They're not trying to put fights on the table. They're just trying to have time in the UFC. And I don't want to just be in the UFC. I want to fight.
You know, 125 pounds, it's kind of like we all have these questions of like, what's the future hold for division? And, you know, everything just, it keeps going forward. You know, we'll see what happens with Cejudo. It's a huge fight. And you mentioned about, this is the fight that you wanted. And you actually got it.
I mean, how many asked for it.
How many times have you asked for a fight? And now it finally you get the fight you wanted.
I've asked for several fights. I've had guys that were in the UFC agree to fight me. We verbally agreed on the internet, and it never happens. And, you know, this one, like, I saw right whenever they started signing some flyweights again, I was like, okay, something's happening. So I can either sit here and wait, or I can call out the best dude I can think of. And then I knew right away I was going to call out the winner of Pantoja Figueiredo. I was happy that Figueiredo win. I feel like stylistically it's a better matchup for me, and he's good, man. And I do good against good guys. Like when I fight Demetrius Johnson, it brings the Demetrius Johnson level out of me. Like I want to fight the best guys, because I tend to do better when I'm fighting a good opponent. When I know the guy is good, like I personally just do better. So I got the fight that I wanted. It's going to put me in the top three, I imagine. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Cejudo, but I'm going to be right there ready to go after this one.
I know you've done some training out in Vegas.
I live there.
You know, and Joe B's out there.
We train together 3 times a week, maybe 4.
Would you fight each other?
Oh, yeah. We fought each other once before. He submitted me. Then he coached me on The Ultimate Fighter. I was his first pick on The Ultimate Fighter. He coached me to win The Ultimate Fighter. And then he got me to the opportunity to fight Demetrius Johnson for a world title. And now we're on the same team. We have the same coaches. We train together. If me and him have to fight or get to fight each other for a world title, that's best case scenario for him, for me, and for our team. It just means that we're doing something right, because him and I were both coached by Robert Follis, who passed away. And like we've both kind of been searching for a team and some coaches. And then like we kind of made our own little group of a bunch of ragtag dudes who didn't have a coach anymore. And you know, we created a team, and now we have coaches and a great team. And it would be all positives if we got to fight each other.
You know, there was a time where it seemed like guys were going away from Vegas, but it seems like now with the PI, it's kind of brought everyone back to Vegas. Not just with the PI, but all the other gyms in Vegas. Have you seen that since you've been out there?
Yeah, man. The thing is you can't use the Performance Institute unless you're in Las Vegas. And that was my thing. As soon as they built it, I didn't think twice about it. I packed my shit and I moved, because I don't want anybody else to get something that I'm not. Yeah. Like if there was some crazy thing going on that was legal that I could do anywhere, I would go do it. I'm the guy that will do anything, you know, legal to win fights. And I feel like, you know, with Robert Follis passing, I feel like a lot of guys were kind of mixed up and didn't know where to go. There's a lot of gyms, but you know, it's hard to find a coach that you really stick with and fit in with. And man, me and Joe B both got lucky with, you know, finding, Casey Halstead, he's our jiu-jitsu coach. And we had, our striking coach from The Ultimate Fighter. So like, I feel like my team is still going from the Tough House. And like, I feel like Joe is still my coach from the Tough House, and like, look up to the guys. He's a good friend. He's a great dude. And like, man, I'd be honored to get a chance to fight him, especially for the belt. That would be the only time I'd really want to fight him. But I know he feels the same way. Like, we train together, so what? Like, that's what fighters do. Yeah. We fight, and there's no hard feelings for me ever afterwards, and I know Joe's the same.
It's almost one of those things of like, you know what? Hey, we fight in the gym all the time. Let's get paid for this.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you mentioned stylistically of you love this matchup. Is there something in particular that really sticks out to you?
Yeah, for sure. He's a big puncher. He's heavy on his feet, and he throws bombs. And like, that style is the first time. My first 3 fights in Titan, I fought Iliarte Santos, who was like 30 and 19, heavy punching Brazilian, 19 and 1, hard-hitting Brazilian. I fought Felipe Efren, who was 11-0, a hard-hitting Brazilian. I feel like I've fought this guy three times already. Mm-hmm. So, like, for me, it's I couldn't ask for a better matchup. Like, what he's good at is my best defenses. So I'm as confident as I've ever been. And, like, the injury helped, not my knee necessarily, but the rest of my body. It gave me a little bit of time to chill. Mm-hmm. I haven't taken any time off, you know, since I started this game. And then I've never had an injury. And then now all of a sudden I've been out for a year. And as bad as it was, the rest of my body is kind of like caught up to my knee that is now brand new. So I'm feeling pretty good.
Did it take some time to get confidence in that knee?
It did. It took a lot of time. And then when my confidence got there, I was feeling 100%. And then I re-tore my meniscus in my knee that had already had the surgeries. So it set me back a few weeks, but it was still like I was cleared to go. It just my range of motion wasn't really there. And it mentally that set me back a little bit. But again, like I go to therapy twice a day, mm-hmm. and like I get to watch my progress happen. So like I know that I'm getting something that not everybody's getting. I know I'm getting something that Figueiredo is not getting for sure.
You know, you mentioned about, you know, who knows what could be next after this. You know, is it the hope that, hey, hopefully Cejudo comes back to 25, or is it one of those things, I'm not even thinking about that?
So for me, it's I don't really care one way or the other. I'm super stoked that Cejudo came down, won the flyweight belt, beat TJ Dillashaw, went up, won the bantamweight belt. Like, he did a lot for the little guys. He brought some light back to the division. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he did kind of save the division, but if he jumps ship, like, I don't know if that's going to hurt the division or not. But me, personally, best-case scenario, I win this fight, Cejudo comes down, and I get to fight Cejudo. But in all reality, I know that the next guy in line has to be Joseph Benavidez. Yeah. He has a win over Cejudo. Like, I'm not trying to jump that line. I know, like, how to pay my dues, and Joe is the guy. Joe deserves it, and I don't think there's any question about that. But I'm going to be right around waiting. So it doesn't really matter who. It's just more about, like, being able to go out there and do what I really like to do. And man, I get to do that Saturday.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've noticed today on social media, because obviously with whatever's happened with Jonna Jędrzejczyk, I know I saw her downstairs, and appears that, you know, she's going to, you know, look to make weight. And someone said, if that's not the main event, Tim and Davison should be the main event. Because it seems like fans, this is like the fight that outside of the main event have really gravitated towards.
Yeah, but man, you got to look at it like in lines of like pay-per-view vibe, or not pay-per-view vibes, but just popularity of people. And man, for me, it's like I'm really humbled. It feels good that somebody would think that I should be the main event, but it's got to be Cub Swanson and Gracie. Like, those guys are their names, and like Cub's been in this game a long time. So like I would put them guys ahead of me, but you know, I'll fight wherever they want. I actually like to fight the very first fight on the card. I've three fights, the very first fight on the card, and I've gotten bonuses in all three of those fights. So I don't mind being the very first guy to fight.
Is it also like, hey, I know exactly when I'm fighting, so let me get the arena, we go, and we don't have to sit around?
Yeah, I'm trying to get in and get out. I'm not a complicated guy. I want to win my fight and then go see my friends and my family.
Is there any, do you have any rituals like after a fight's over? Like, you know, is it like, hey, I go get this to eat, this to drink?
I always say like, oh, I want to eat this and this. But usually after the fight, man, I just want to go chill and hang out with my girlfriend or my daughter. I quit drinking. So after the whole Fallis ordeal, there was a time where, like, when I fought De La Rosa, I came into that fight week at 132 pounds. So I was 4 pounds under the weight limit to fight De La Rosa. I had 2 weeks from my fight where Fallis killed himself, and like I was just up all night drinking and doing drugs and not taking care of myself. And like for the first time in my whole adult life, like I'm not drinking, I'm clean, I'm feeling good. And like I feel like I was doing myself a disservice for a while, and like I was kind of blaming that on Fallis, which was bullshit. And uh-huh. You know, now I'm kind of using that to motivate me.
In terms of when did you stop drinking?
I quit drinking completely. I don't know how long ago it's been, but I stopped drinking for like 3 or 4 months, like where I didn't drink anything. And since then I've had a beer or two, but like, okay. Not like I was drinking every day, and like, it just not to where it was like a problem, but I would drink 2 or 3 beers every day. And like, it just, if I wanted something cold to drink that wasn't water, I would just drink a beer. But that's just a habit that I was getting into. And like, not doing that, my weight right now is lower than it has been ever at fight week. And like, I have people come up to me like, hey man, you look big, you look strong. And I was 134 pounds yesterday coming in, and my last fight at 25 on the Tuesday that I came in, I was 152. So I'm walking around a lot lighter. I haven't sacrificed any strength or anything. And like my body is just feeling better. Like I'm not punishing myself by, you know, treating myself shitty.
Yeah, I was talking to Lewis Smoke, and he's been very open about his sobriety. And, of course, you're both represented by the same agency.
And he's a good friend of mine.
And, you know, one of the things that I'd heard he talk about, another interview about it, brought up to me, and he said, he goes, kombucha is something that he actually started drinking that kind of, he said, he goes, it kind of replaced it in a way.
Yeah, it's a carbonation and something that's not water. Man, as a fighter, you just drink so much water all the time. Like, you get sick of it. Like, you want anything but water. But same with him. I'm sure it was like a force of habit. You get a habit of drinking beer every day. That's what you drink. You just have to change your habits up a little bit.
Yeah, I do that. Like I'll drink water in your office. I'm like, I feel like every hour I'm going to the bathroom. I mean, I'm just like, oh, how do you know?
That's where I'm at.
And it's like I need like some type of flavor, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Something I do want to mention, unfortunately, the passing away of a friend of yours, William Joplin, pancreatic cancer, which I'm very familiar with because my grandmother passed away. She lasted 2 years when they had given her 6 months. What would be your memory you would want the fans to know about him?
Man, this dude is just he's the only like real true fighter that I know. He didn't have a whole lot else going on. His life was the gym, and he was never the best dude, but he was always at the gym. If guys needed rides to the gym, like he was there. He's cornered me in my fights, and then. His biggest moment in his whole life was when he got to fight Juan Archuleta for Bellator. Like, and I helped negotiate the pay for that because they were trying to get a hold of Joplin. And I was like, you guys are going to give him a flat rate. You're not just going to, you know what I mean? So he got the biggest paycheck that he's had 60, 70 fights, the biggest paycheck he's ever got. And I'm sure he had cancer then too. Who knows how long he'd been fighting with cancer. I know the guy, and I know more than anything, he wanted to go out on a shield. He didn't want to go out sad, puking on himself and shitting on himself. He wanted to go out. If he could have it his way, he would have died in the cage with Juan Archuleta. That would have been best case scenario for him because he was a true fighter, and he was like the embodiment of a fighter. And you know, I was way higher and have made it way farther than he ever did. But like, I looked up to him for that, like, cause he had that dogfight. He didn't care if it was in a back alley, if you wanted to scrap for $10, like, he'd be your guy, no anger or anything. Yeah. He loved to fight, and even if he lost, it didn't matter. He was gonna go out there and he was gonna make it hell for people. And man, he did a lot for our team at Glory MMA, for me and James Krause. And you know, I'm sad to see him go, but at the same time, I'm glad that his pain and suffering is over.
Yeah, I mean, I think for anyone who has seen someone go through that cancer and the treatment, it's one of these things I always tell people. I can never get that memory out of my mind of seeing what my grandmother was like for those 2 years, and there's not much moving around, and all you're doing is going to chemo and coming home. I mean, it's brutal.
Well, lucky for Will, he didn't have to do that. He got diagnosed. He was pretty down on himself. They still let him compete in jiu-jitsu tournaments. He was still competing. He had a good job. He's got a lot of good friends behind him, and you know, he got to go out quick and pretty painless. And I'm glad I didn't have to see him suffer like that for years. I know he wouldn't have wanted that. So as shitty as it is, this was, you know, best case scenario.
Do people know he was competing with cancer?
He didn't even know. And nobody knew. He just went to the doctor one day because his stomach hurt, and they were like, stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Ugh. You have a few months to live. They had less than a year, I think, they gave him. And like, who knows? I mean, he had 60 fights. He could have been fighting for 10 years with it. But he's one of those guys that's so tough. If I would have been his doctor, I'd have just said he didn't have cancer, because he's such a hard head. Like, if he really believed that he didn't have cancer, like, he probably would have lived, because he's that dude. But like, you know, as soon as he found out, it just kind of, it went downhill quick for him. But, you know, at least it didn't drag out for years, and, you know, his teammates and family members didn't have to take care of him and shit, because I know he didn't want that.
Yeah, it's, man, you know, there's a lot of, cancer sucks. I mean, I think everyone out there has known someone who's gone through it and stuff. But we do look forward to seeing your fight here Saturday. Prelims start 5 p.m. on ESPN+. Tim, as always, appreciate time. Let me know if you follow social media, if there's anybody sponsors. Floor is yours, man.
Yeah, man, check me out at Awkward MMA. I just want to say, Armadillo, Will Joplin, we love you at Glory MMA, James Krause and all those guys. Even though my old team isn't here with me, I carry the shit that I learned from those guys with me every day.
And there was my conversation with UFC Tampa fighters Eric Anders, Thomas Gifford, and Tim Elliott. A lot to take from all three of those conversations. Great to chat with those guys at the Fire Hotel. And, you know, of course, you know, earlier this morning is when I recorded, you know, myself and Daniel talking about these fights. And, you know, we're going to see what happens with the main event. I will tell you, I did see Joanna at the Fighter Hotel. So, you know, it does appear that, you know, she's going to try to make 116 pounds for that fight on Saturday night. But I think it's, you know, I think one of the things that's obviously clear with Joanna, of course, this is not the first time that there's been an issue with her potentially making weight. We all remember, you know, when she fought in New York City and she had talked about that. So it'll be interesting to kind of see if the UFC even attempts to book her in a 115-pound fight in the future. I doubt it. You would almost have to think that, you know, the thought process is going to be to go to 125 pounds. So, you know, as of recording this aspect, it's about 4 o'clock Eastern time here on Wednesday afternoon. You know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, a lot to take out of those three conversations that I had. You know, Eric Anders, you know, kind of some of my takeaways from that conversation was, you know, about, you know, him leaning out and how he's coming in into this camp, into fight week, and not a ton of weight to lose. You know, Thomas Gifford, even, you know, noting the same thing, also kind of talking about how, you know, the move to Factory X, which he has been at now for over 5 months now, and kind of how that has changed him, and also talking about, you know, keeping, you know, not standing straight up and what Mark Montoya has done for him. And then Tim Elliott, a lot to take from that, of course, the state of the flyweight division, you know, coming back from that knee injury nearly 2 years away for him, and also talking about the passing away of William Joplin, which happened earlier this week, passing away after a battle with pancreatic cancer, which, as I noted in my conversation with Tim, it's something that I am familiar with, as my grandmother passed away, you know, years ago via pancreatic cancer. And, you know, I think anyone who's out there have seen someone go through pancreatic cancer, you kind of you understand. I mean, it's just there's certain aspects, I'll tell you, of seeing my grandmother when she went through that, images that will always be there for me. But I do appreciate all three of those fighters coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, coming up next week, we'll talk about what happened at UFC Tampa and all the MMA going on this weekend. There's a ton of mixed martial arts action going on this weekend. Of course, we'll get you ready, you know, for next weekend's MMA. So looking forward to that, as I'm getting on a plane tomorrow on Thursday, heading to London. I'll be in London on Friday morning. So, you know, if you got any good spots that I got to hit, this would be like my third or fourth trip to London. So I've kind of done all the touristy things. So if you got any, you know, local spots that yeah, definitely should hit up, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at Jason_Floyd, also on Instagram at Jason_Floyd. Trying to grow my following up on Instagram and give you a little peek into what my my life is about. You know, trying to put pictures out there, which usually includes pictures of stadiums, pictures of my dog, and pictures of what I'm eating. But definitely trying to up my Instagram game a little bit more. So, of course, as always, I appreciate everyone that checks out the MMA Report podcast every week. Of course, one of the great ways to show your support for this show is by leaving a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. I will tell you, the podcast should be available on iHeartRadio within about the next couple of days, just kind of waiting for the approval process on that. So if how you listen to podcasts is via iHeartRadio, the MMA Report podcast will be on there here. You know, should be in the next couple of days. We submitted that last week, so it should be up here very soon. I will tell you, working on trying to get Walt Harris on the show this week. Next week. I know he is here in Tampa, trying to coordinate a time to sit and chat with him before I hop on the plane to head to London. Also going to have some interviews up on the MMAReport.com. Had a chance earlier this week to talk to Morgan Hickam, who she's got a fight coming up here in Valor Fight. So be on the lookout for that interview on the MMAReport.com. Also coming up with MMAReport.com on Thursday, myself and Pete Rogers, Pete the Heat, we are going to talk about UFC Tampa from a DraftKings perspective. Always great to get a fighter's perspective on the fights, not only just from DraftKings perspective, but on other aspects of the fight game. So looking forward to chatting with Pete on Thursday about DFS. So be sure to check that out. That show is available on YouTube. It's on theMMAReport.com. Also, we do post it on Facebook as well. So be sure to check that out. So this has been the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com and your favorite podcasting platforms.
I'm Jerry Pitot, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.